Alaska's campaign finance watchdog may penalize a Skagway Assembly candidate for incomplete campaign disclosures. And the Haines Moose Hunt begins tomorrow. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Emily Files. Those stories and more up next. A Skagway political candidate's transparency on campaign disclosure forms is in question for the second time in 2 years. The state's campaign finance watchdog is deciding whether to penalize Assembly candidate Dan Henry for incomplete disclosures. This is the second time Henry violated Alaska law by omitting financial information on his candidate disclosures. That's according to the staff of the Alaska Public Offices Commission. The most recent APOC case stems from a complaint from Skagway resident Lynn Cameron. Cameron accused Henry of failing to report debts over $1,000. Henry was saddled with significant debt in 2016 after he pled guilty to failing to pay federal income taxes. He was fined $600,000 and sentenced to a year in prison. In the federal case, it came to light that Henry did not report his income on campaign disclosures. APOC ordered Henry to pay a $22,000 penalty for the incomplete paperwork. Henry is running for borough assembly this October. Before his incarceration, he served on the assembly for about 20 years. On his 2017 disclosure form, Henry did not report either his debt to the IRS or the state. After Cameron's complaint, Henry amended his paperwork to include the IRS debt, but not the APOC debt. He says that's because he's appealing the fine. But APOC Director Heather Hebden said Henry should have been transparent about both debts. She spoke during a commission hearing Wednesday.
Mr. Henry's 2017 candidate POFD statement and his amended statement failed to disclose substantial debt.
Hebden recommended the maximum possible fine of $220. That's $10 for each day of the violation. But Cameron, who brought the complaint, asked for a harsher penalty. She wants APOC to remove Henry from the October 3rd ballot. She says not all Skagway voters are aware of Henry's financial disclosure troubles.
I believe that there are still a lot of
people who have not been informed of any of the facts of this case and would not have that information at the time of election.
But Henry said he thinks most people are aware of the APOC situation because of media coverage. And he said it didn't seem very many people were interested in his campaign disclosures anyway, because only a few had requested copies from the Skagway clerk. The commission has 10 days to make a decision on Cameron's complaint. The group chose to hear this case in an accelerated manner because of the upcoming election. But on a second complaint against Henry, the commission denied an expedited hearing. It will still be investigated, it will just take longer. That complaint is from Skagway resident Roger Griffin. Griffin levies the same allegation against Henry, that he didn't disclose debt on his most recent candidate paperwork.
Mr. Henry is a repeat offender who treats the financial disclosure requirements of Alaska law in a cavalier manner.
Griffin also has a second accusation that Henry didn't report gifts from a company called ClubLink on his 2014 and 2015 disclosures. ClubLink is the parent company of White Pass and Yukon Route Railroad. The city of Skagway has been in negotiations with White Pass on and off for several years over a waterfront lease. Henry traveled to Florida for negotiation talks with ClubLink. Assembly minutes show statements from borough officials that the company paid for city representatives' lodging and meals during these trips. Griffin says those gifts should have been reported on Henry's disclosures. Henry said if he could have made ClubLink pay for even more of the trip's expense, he would have, in order to save the city money.
Because I would have wanted to have the city of Skagway spend less of its money on this agreement discussion, period. Now, if that is regarded as a gift, I know I wasn't going to pay for it, and I was trying to make sure that Skagway wasn't going to pay for it.
Henry will have the opportunity to defend himself further once APOC staff investigate Griffin's allegations and a hearing is set. It could be a few months before that happens. In the meantime, the commission has until September 25th to decide the penalty for Henry's most recent incomplete disclosures. The Haines Area Moose Hunt starts tomorrow. The hunt is scheduled to stay open until October 7th, unless it's forced to close early. The last 2 years, the harvest was faster than usual, and the Alaska Department of Fish and Game closed it by emergency order. Carl Koch is a wildlife biologist with Fish and Game. Last year was the first time since 2012 the department met its bull-to-cow ratio in Unit 1D. In aerial surveys of the Chilkat Valley, the moose count was the highest it's been in the last 10 years. But Koch says that doesn't change the number of moose that they are allowing hunters to harvest this year.
We have a guideline harvest of 20 to 25. And, you know, since we're going on minimum counts, we kind of always have a pretty steady, lowish average of calves, about 13%. I think it was 14% with this last count. And so we're sticking with our harvest guideline of 20 to 25.
Koch says the count is influenced by a number of weather factors, and it doesn't necessarily indicate an increase in population. There are no new rules or regulations for the moose hunt this year, but Koch does want to remind hunters of an existing restriction.
Drones are illegal. You can't use them to aid in any way in your hunt. And if folks have questions about that, they can ask me or the trooper. But yeah, who would have thought I'd ever have to mention remote-controlled flying objects?
Fish and Game issued 250 moose hunt permits in Management Area 1D this year, though Koch says generally fewer people actually participate in the hunt. KH&S will have routine updates on the moose harvest numbers. The Haynesboro manager and assembly want to get more serious about Lutac Dock. The dock is Haynes' connection to freight and fuel deliveries, but it's at risk of catastrophic failure. Engineers say it's living on borrowed time. Haynes has a few conceptual options for replacement or repair of the vital facility. The cheapest one is an estimated $21 million. It would replace the dock with birthing dolphins. Over the past few weeks, there's been disagreement about whether Haynes should pursue funding for the least expensive option or a more ideal design. The preferred design involves encapsulation of the existing cells. It would retain the footprint of the current dock, which includes storage space. It would cost about $37 million. That design would be preferable if the facility were to be used for mineral shipments or some other new industry in the future. Borough Manager Deborah Schnabel said Haynes needs to decide between the favored option, which will be harder to fund, or the bare-bones design.
It's good to think of the future planning for the economy of the community. And I think a lot of people see this Lutac Dock as being an economic driver. And then the other face of the argument is the catastrophic response thing. Like, can we survive without having something?
The borough's first attempt to get a federal grant for Lutac was rejected, at least partly because there is so little funding currently in place for the project. Schnabel says at this point, the borough has dedicated only $1.2 million to the project. She has requested up to $10 million of reappropriated Juneau Access funds from the state. And the borough plans to continue pursuing federal funding.
And I think that in order for us to get what we want, we have to start looking to ourselves to find that, you know, put up a little bit more of our own. That's not to say that we should stop looking for more. It's not to say we should stop trying to get exactly what we want. But I would like to see us come together and discuss this.
The Assembly decided to schedule a meeting with the Planning Commission and Port and Harbor Advisory Committee to delve into how to pay for Lutac Dock. The meeting is September 27th at 6 p.m. For KHNS News, I'm Emily Files. Thanks for joining us this evening. You can listen to and read local news stories on our website at khns.org.